Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey everyone, today I'm joined with David Parker. He is a hospice nurse. He's also a near-death experiencer. I found him on the Jeff Mara podcast. Thank you, Jeff. Hey, David, thank you so much for joining me and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure.
Listen, your stories, when you were talking to Jeff, I had chills almost every other word you were saying about certain things, and I could not believe the things that you had gone through. So before we get started, can you tell me a little bit about your near-death experience when you were younger, and then we can kind of go from there?
Sure. Yeah, I lived on a farm with my grandmother.
Yeah.
And we had chickens in the yard.
Yeah.
And somehow I picked up a fungal infection, they think, from the chickens. And this is back in the late 1950s, early 1960s.
Okay.
And there really wasn't a whole lot of treatment for this infection.
Yeah.
And I spent the best part of maybe about a year and a half in and out of a hospital.
Oh,
I was very, very sick.
Wow.
So, one visit, I was there, and something went wrong. I mean, I remember being in the bed and looking up, and all at once, here comes all these doctors and nurses, and they start working on me, and it was very painful, needles. And I must have had a sudden change in my health condition,
yeah.
And it was just a room full of people working on me.
Yeah.
And I'm scared and screaming. And the next thing I knew, I just got out of bed, walked right through it all, and just walked out the room into the hallway of the hospital. And I could look back and see them, all these people busy over the bed. And I couldn't care less about it. It's like, well, that's interesting.
Right.
What are those people doing?
Right.
So I walk out of my hospital room and I go into the hallway of the hospital. And it had very tall ceiling and very wide walls. It was an old building.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see people, you know, somebody being pushed in a wheelchair and doctors walking this way, people walking that way. No one paid any attention to me. I was just enjoying walking down the hallway. And as I came down the hallway, there was this huge ball of what looked like pen and ink drawings of people.
Oh.
And it went from the floor to the ceiling, from side to side. And again, this was a very tall hallway.
Yeah.
There was probably at least 300 adult. It was men and women. And their outlines, I could clearly see the outline of their shape. It was like in black ink, and then where the rest of the body would be, it was like a cream color.
Yeah.
And it was like people without bones, because they were moving in a way that no one human or living could move.
Wow.
And they would swirl around like heads and legs and chest and torsos, swirling in and out of the ball. Sometimes on the farm, we would see a ball of snakes.
Yeah.
I don't know what ball of snakes were doing. Maybe it was keeping warm for the winter or something.
Yeah.
There'd be like, you know, 15, 20 snakes just swirling around. That's exactly what it looked like. But it was people. And they were bending bizarrely.
Oh,
no way a human person could bend. Faces going in and out. And I was just staring at it, thinking, what on earth is this?
Yeah.
There's so many in a constant motion going in different directions, around and down and in and out. And as I'm standing there looking at that, up to the left side of me comes this little girl.
Mm.
And she's probably about my age, 6, 7, 8, something like that.
Yeah.
I was probably about 5 or 6 at the time.
Okay.
And she had this little pinafore on, and she had the biggest smile on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And she came up to me and goes, hey, do you want to go play? And I thought, well, sure.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be great. I'm feeling great. I'm feeling wonderful.
Yeah.
We go outside to the left. It was like a doorway was there, and there wasn't a doorway at this place in the hospital in reality, later looking after this experience. But we went out the doorway, and we were outside in this gorgeous playground, and it was bright, but it wasn't sunny.
Mm-hmm.
It was warm. It wasn't hot.
Yeah.
There were other children playing there. They had hula hoops and big bouncy balls, bouncing balls back and forth. And it looked like somebody was playing some baseball. Just several other kids off at a distance. And she and I picked up a ball and started bouncing it back and forth. And we had the best time.
Wow.
And then there was this pole with like chains and rope hanging down, and it had like hoops on the end.
Mm-hmm.
She would grab one and I'd grab another, and we'd run, and this thing would spin around. And I had never seen anything like it before. It was later on when I was describing it to my mom. She says, well, that's a maypole. You know, it's like an old time thing kids used to play with.
Okay.
And we had such a wonderful time. It was just such a beautiful place to be.
Mm.
This girl came up to me and said, hey, you can play a little bit longer, but you can't stay here.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, why not?
Yeah.
This is the best place ever.
Yeah.
And we played a little bit longer. And then she said, you know, you're going to have to go now. And I felt bad. And she says, my name is Penny. And I want you to tell my mother that I love her.
Oh.
And I thought, well, you know, can't you tell her yourself? And that was it. She just started fading away. And the next thing I know, I'm back in bed.
Yeah.
In my hospital bed. The doctors and the technicians and the nurses are starting to leave the side of my bed. So whatever medical emergency I went through evidently was resolved. There was a couple of them kind of hanging around, but
sure.
You know, whatever was going on is over. And they had placed plastic all over my bed. There was like a side rail up,
mm-hmm.
and then they were pumping oxygen in. They used to do oxygen tents back then.
Oh,
and now,
right.
You know,
yeah.
You put little masks on your face, and they just get direct oxygen that way.
Sure.
So I'm laying there, and I was like, you know, what happened? And, you know, go back with Benny and play.
Right.
I was having such a good time. So this was like in the afternoon, and in the evening, the night shift came on, and it was this black nurse. I had her very often.
Yeah.
My mom and she had become friends, and she came in and was taking care of me. And I just instinctively knew that's Penny's mother.
Oh.
And I just felt it.
Yeah.
So she was caring for me. I said, I was talking to Penny, and she told me to tell you that she loved you. And she just kind of froze and just stared at me. And I described her. I described, you know, what her face looked like, the very long, thick braid going down the middle of her back, what she looked like, what her clothes looked like, and what we had done. And she walked out of my room and never came back.
Oh.
And my mom later told me that she quit right on the spot.
Oh my God.
Freaked her out so much. It ended up that she had lost her little girl, Penny, who had been ice skating and fell through the ice.
Oh.
And she said it was a long time before they found her body. And I felt so bad. And I think my mom had tried to reach out to her, but she just didn't want to talk to anybody.
Sure, yeah.
So I hope eventually this was incredibly healing for her. And, you know, that she finally did hear from her daughter. And her daughter was absolutely beautiful and happy and loving.
Oh.
And it's interesting because I've heard a few other near-death experiences from other people, and I really don't watch them that much because I had my own.
Right.
And it was interesting. I've had multiple spirit experiences, and so often it wasn't like it was for me. It seems more often than not I'm helping someone else touch in with somebody still living.
And
that seemed to be the majority of what I saw, what I got out of this experience with Penny. And it was interesting, that big ball of people that I saw, I don't know what it was, they looked miserable, but I didn't get a bad feeling from them.
Right.
But later, as I grew up and I became a nurse, and I was a nurse for 42 years before I recently retired, I saw that exact same thing six more times.
Oh my God.
While I was at work as a nurse, and it was always in a hospital setting. I never saw it anywhere else. It was always in a hallway in a hospital.
Yeah.
And I saw it twice when I worked at an inpatient AIDS unit that we had here.
Yeah.
And once in a hospice setting. and then the other three times were in actual hospitals. The exact same thing. They were swirling. Once I was actually late for a staff meeting.
Yeah.
And I stood outside the staff meeting. I was working as a nurse.
Yeah.
Just to watch this huge, massive ball of people. And other people were walking right through it, didn't see it at all. But yeah. I saw it just clear as day.
Yeah.
Swirling in and out and writhing and bending and twisting. Yeah. I had no idea what it was. It wasn't frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel pain or misery from them.
Yeah.
It's Jenny, I pick up on that. I pick up on feelings.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that, but I just sent them love. This one I watched for probably about 20, 25 minutes or
so.
And finally, my boss came and grabbed me. And pulled me and
right.
And I kept saying, look, and she didn't see it.
She couldn't see it. Do you think that was because of the gift you got when you went on your near-death? You know,
I don't know. I don't know a lot of this stuff. I know what I experienced, and I try to keep it exactly at that. I try to keep it at facts without interpreting too much into it.
Right, yeah. And, you know, when you were on Jeff Marr's podcast, David, you asked him, you know, or he asked you what you thought it was, and you were like, I don't know. No one's ever told me what it was. And Jeff Marr said, you know, hey, I've never heard anyone say that. And I've had psychic mediums on my podcast, and I asked both of them, they're my friends now, and I said, what do you think this is? And I explained to them what you just explained to my audience. And they said, both of them agreed, it was probably some kind of energy vortex, and it was your interpretation of what was going on, but it's from all the trauma in the hospital. You know, because energy can't be created or destroyed, but it's got to go somewhere. So it was gathering up, and after layer and layer and year, after trauma, it became this vortex, this energy vortex, and that's kind of where they were going with it.
It very well could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, it was only in hospital settings.
Yes.
And so it could be an energy. It could be an experience, you know, soul needs to go through before it can move on to its next, you know. I don't know. I don't want to say it's this, that, and the other. Certainly
yeah.
was real. I had friends visiting me. I was in a hospice setting, and it was a tiny hallway.
Mm.
And we had a sliding glass window on one side of the wall and a soda machine. And it was just a tiny little break room, and there's people coming through. And there it was there. But since the room was small, the ball of people was small, so there was a lot less people.
Yeah.
At hospice, I mean, we had probably 2,000 people die in every single room.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody dies in hospice.
Right.
And it was a 10-bed inpatient unit. And, you know, so there's probably more death there than in a hospital. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Odds are, or at least equal, in such a smaller space. But whatever the space was, the ball of people was contained in that space,
right.
At least the way I saw it.
Sure.
They were the same color. It was an off-white kind of a luminescent color.
Mm-hmm.
And then the outlines were just black, like a drawing.
Wow.
And they swirled in and out. And their faces would stretch.
Ooh.
And the face would come out.
Very
and, you know,
scary looking.
Armpit.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. It was
yeah.
bizarre, but I wasn't panicked.
Right.
It never scared me. I wasn't frightened. I wasn't drawn to it, but I wasn't repelled from it. It was just an experience. I find that, I don't know, when I don't make a judgment, more tends to come. And I don't close off the possibility
sure.
from the universe to unfolding more.
And, you know, to me, it could have just been David's interpretation of what this is, this energy is.
Yeah.
And maybe no one else saw what David saw, because that's just how you saw it.
That's it. Yes.
So when you were in hospice, are there, and I don't know if you've been asked this question, you probably have, are there common things that people do when they're on their deathbed that you can talk to my listeners about, like reaching up to the ceiling, rallying back, you know, and all of a sudden they pass away? Tell me some of the things that happen. Can you do that?
Sure. I was a hospice nurse for 17 years.
Okay.
And five of those years, I worked in a 10-bed pediatric hospice unit. So we had newborns to 17-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
We had a lot of birth defects.
Okay.
And then the other 12 years, I worked in a 10-bed adult hospice.
Okay.
And it's interesting, the dying process is so different between adults and children.
Oh, I'm sure.
Physiologically and emotionally, the way they see death.
Yes.
And the things that they would see and report are different, children and adults. But many of the adults, and speaking of rallying around, we would prepare their loved ones, you know, as they're getting closer to death and they're shutting down.
Yeah.
And the throat makes this strained sound because the muscles are relaxing. And
right.
It almost sounds miserable and painful, but it's not. It's just the body relaxing and mm. the air is going in and out of their lungs.
Okay.
It just makes a sound. And as they start to shut down, we warn them, very often our patients will rally around for like a day just before they die.
Oh, wow.
And they'll go into get almost to a comatose state, but they're just barely responsive. They'll moan a little bit when we turn them or something.
Yeah.
And then all at once they'll have a day where they're sitting up and they're eating and they're lucid and they're talking to their family. And the family thinks, oh, they've been healed. Thank you, Jesus, whatever. And we
yeah.
kind of warn them, just remember we talked about this rally, you know,
right.
Enjoy it, spend your time with them, share love, tell them that you're going to be okay.
Right.
It's okay to go on. Relieve that pressure of leaving the family behind, and the next day then they're back non-responsive, and generally a day or two later they go ahead and pass.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
just bizarre, but we saw it again and again and again.
I
rally.
Know. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this: did you ever have a shared death experience with anyone? I think you talked about a woman that she was comatose.
Oh my gosh. That was absolutely, that was like hitting the lottery.
Right?
That was so life-changing for me. What this woman, my patient, what
yeah.
this patient did for me, I can't tell you how oh. wonderful that has been. And it's been a quarter of a century, and I think about her every single day
oh.
that she did this. And at that time, I think it was work. I can't remember if it was day or night shift, whatever. I did a lot of both. I got to work, and this woman had just been admitted the shift before I came on.
Okay.
And I, you know, saw her name, and I didn't recognize her or anything, so I went in to check on her.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just some feeling for this lady.
Yeah.
It was like, I just felt drawn to her.
Oh.
And so she was non-responsive.
Right.
We had to do total care for her. And like I do with all of my patients, especially the non-responsive ones, I go in and I introduce myself. The thing I always told my patients is, my name's David. I'm going to take care of you today. And I'm the best nurse in the state of Arizona. I don't know where I came up with that. But I just tell them that to let them know
yeah.
and to be reassured oh. they're in the best place they can possibly be.
Nice.
And I'm going to watch out for them. And I tell them, you know, this is what's going on with you. You have this diagnosis. You're here in hospice. This may be your last stop on planet Earth.
Yeah.
But we're all going to sit here and take good care of you.
Mm.
And you're not going to be alone. And when you're ready to go, it's okay to go.
Yeah.
So we would change them and clean them up and give them medicine and reposition. So I did that with this lady. And about 20 minutes after I took care of her, somebody down the hall needed something extra.
Right.
Some of our patients, you know, especially with certain cancers or something, they needed more frequent medication.
Sure.
So as I'm going down the hallway to take care of somebody else, and I look in everybody's room just to, as I go down the hallway, check, make sure everything's all right.
Right.
And I go by this lady's room, and, you know, she was pretty much non-responsive and unable to do anything.
Yeah.
And I go by, and she's sitting up on the side of the bed.
What?
And looking at me and smiling at me, and her hair looked good.
Yeah.
And this woman had to be like, you know, 70, 80
yeah.
Year old lady. And now she's looking like a 30-year-old.
Oh,
with
wow.
You know, wavy hair and a big smile and her nice gown on. And I look at her and think, well, you know, looking good. And I head on down the hallway. About 10 more feet. I got goosebumps.
Oh.
I stop and I think, what was that?
Right.
She's in a coma. What's she doing sitting up on the side of the bed?
Yeah.
So I start taking steps backwards. It's like, wait a minute, what did I see? And I go back to her room and I look in the doorway and she's back in bed, laying down, the side rails up. She had like agonal breathing. I had just given her morphine and put some oxygen on her.
Yeah.
And she's still laying there. And then it hit me. I had just taken care of her and cleaned her up. She only had one leg.
Oh.
One of her legs had been amputated really close to the hip.
Okay.
Sometime a long time ago. And when I saw her sitting at the side of the bed, she had two legs.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
And I just went up to her and I touched the side rail and I looked at her. I think I started crying. And I said, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you,
oh.
Thank you. You just showed me your soul.
Yes.
I just saw your soul.
Yes.
And you looked at me and I looked back at you and we're both smiling. We had an interaction at the soul level.
Yes.
You shared your soul with me while you're still alive. And I'm thinking, oh, I just covered in goosebumps now.
Yeah.
It was just like, I couldn't believe it. I never felt so happy.
Oh.
Thank you for sharing this with me.
Yes.
What a wonderful blessing you've shared with me. And evidently, you're getting ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting ready to, it's like the butterfly coming out of the cocoon and stretching its wings,
oh.
And drying it off in the light.
Yes.
And, you know, practicing flapping its wings and getting ready to take off. And I said, well, you go. When you're ready, you go. I'm going to be here. I'm going to take good care of you.
Wow.
And take off when you need to go. So the rest of my shift, she made it through the shift.
Yeah.
We took excellent care of all of
sure.
our patients. We had the best staff. And I ran back at, you know, I took care of the lady that I needed to take care of. Went back to the staff and told them what I saw. They run in because they want to see if she's still sitting up, and she wasn't. But they're all seeing stuff too. So anyway, it was the end of my shift. She's still alive. And I go home and I told the oncoming ship what I saw.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, that's so cool. You
yeah.
know, I hope we get to see her do that. And I go home and I go through the front door and I'm going down my hallway. And there she is.
Oh,
in
my
hallway.
God.
Oh,
oh God.
My God. I'm already crying. I'm just covered with goosebumps. And she looked absolutely fabulous. She looked like she just came out of a salon.
Wow.
Her face, she was young.
Yeah.
Maybe 26 to 30, something
yeah.
like that. Standing with two legs.
Yes.
Both were there. She was like in a very soft, like a robe type thing, kind
yeah.
of an off-white robe, smiling at me. And I'm probably, maybe about 8 to 10 feet from her. And see her clear as day. It's like she's physically there.
Oh, wow.
And I'm smiling at her, and she's smiling at me. And I'm just thinking, thank you, thank you,
yes.
thank you, thank you. Thank you for showing me this.
Yes.
And she slowly faded away, and then she was gone. So I ran to the phone, and I called work. I said, you need to go check on room two. Check
yeah.
on this lady and see
yeah.
if she's still alive.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we were just in there. Yeah, she's still here. I said, no, go check on her right now.
Right.
And see what happens. And sometimes when you start turning people, when they're close to death, it really all speeds it up.
Oh, okay.
And they put the phone down, they went in and checked on her, and they came back and said, you're right, she just passed.
Oh my gosh, David.
So I don't remember her ever taking care of her or knowing her. I don't recognize her name. But why did this woman show me her soul before and just after her death?
Yes.
I don't know why she chose me. You would think she'd have friends and family. To
oh,
go
I know. And
know,
she might have.
Just let alone David Parker.
Well, you know, but she might have. I think they have the ability, once they're in spirit, to kind of go wherever they want and be wherever they want to be, as many places as they want to be. You know, and also I just think that, you know, when you saw her, it confirms the fact that there is life after death, guys. We don't just stop existing. You know?
Yeah. No, it continues. And to see her, and there's movement. There's spiritual movement even while the body's still alive.
Oh, wow.
Because she was definitely outside the body while I was still at work, and I saw her sitting on the side of the bed. That's the way I saw her, but
yeah.
she was absolutely whole and perfect.
Yes.
I could just feel the joy just radiate
oh.
from her. I mean, it was just like someone turned a heat lamp on you. And
wow.
And you feel the warmth. It was this beautiful, wonderful warmth when I saw her sitting at the side of the bed.
Wow.
Oh, my God. It was just what she did for me.
Yes.
I mean, this was a wonderful experience for her. I mean, she left the body. She's
yeah.
going on to spirit. But she went out of her way and did this for me.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think she wanted you to tell everybody what happened so you can help other people, because I know there are a lot of skeptics, and that's okay. I'm not here to try to convince anyone, but if this gives anyone comfort to know that this kind of stuff really truly happens, you're not just making this stuff up. But also, David, I was going to talk to you about your grandmother. Tell them the story about her. I was blown away when you were with your grandmother and you spent time with her. So tell my listeners about that experience.
My gosh, yeah, I had so many experiences with her.
Yes.
She saw spirit.
Yes.
She was born in 1889, never went to school. We lived on a farm. My parents were going to college, so yeah, it was just easier for me just to be raised by her,
yeah,
out in this farm. Because, you know, I took care of her. She took care of me. It, yeah, worked out great. We had no indoor plumbing. We had well in the backyard.
Oh, my
God. And when it came time to go to, you know, the restroom, you had to go out the back door, across the yard, and down a hill to an outhouse.
Wow.
So we were out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh.
And so we had multiple spirit contacts there.
Wow.
There was an uncle that had died in our backyard in 1942, which I didn't know anything about,
okay,
at the time. But I kept seeing this man, and I used to say his man in an apron's in the backyard, asking for my brother, Roy.
Oh,
and
wow.
My brother was much older than I. And sometimes he would come and visit. But
yeah,
this man would stand there in the backyard and say, everything will be okay when Roy gets home. Roy will know what to do when he gets home. And I said, well, you know, my brother's not here now. Can I help you?
Right.
And he wouldn't answer me. He wouldn't even look at me. He just said the same thing over and over and over.
Really?
And so this went on multiple times. And finally, I told my grandmother, I says, you know, this man in an apron, standing in the backyard in the middle of nowhere between cows and corn, keeps asking for my brother, Roy. He said, Roy will know what to do. Everything will be okay when Roy gets home.
Yeah.
And she went out there and she saw a mist. I saw the man clearly.
Oh, wow.
And I pointed to this place where I saw him. And she remembered my grandmother's husband, which would have been my grandfather, but he died before I was born.
Yeah.
I never knew him. His name was Roy.
Oh.
And his brother's name was Eugene. And in 1942, he was working on the roof and fell at that exact spot where I saw this man in an apron. And when I described the apron, it was a tool belt. I didn't know. I was a kid.
Well, yeah.
The tool belt around his waist.
How old were you, and David?
I was probably 5 years old.
Okay, keep going.
So she told me that he fell at that exact spot. And later, her husband, who was the sheriff, Roy,
yeah,
came home. They loaded him up in the truck and took him to the hospital, but he actually died in the hospital.
Mm.
But where I saw him, and that's where the spirit was. And all this time, he was saying, you know, Roy will know what to do when he gets home. Well, I was thinking he was talking about my brother,
well,
but
right,
he's actually talking about my grandfather, which would have been his brother.
Right.
We did know what to do when he got home. He loaded him up, but he died anyway.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
That was a wonderful story. But my grandmother would, every now and then, she'd say, they're coming.
Yes.
They're coming. Get ready.
Yes.
Get ready. Go get on the porch. Get on the swing. I'll be right out there. And then she'd mess with her hair, put her teeth in, put some lipstick on,
yeah,
and some powder on her face. Do her best to look presentable.
Right.
And she'd run out, and we'd get on this porch swing. And we just start swinging, and in a moment or two, we would hear people mumbling.
Mm.
And we lived on a gravel road.
Yeah.
And when anybody would come down the gravel road, the rocks would kind of chip, and you'd hear this crackling sound,
sure,
of people or car walking or driving over the gravel.
Yeah.
And we'd hear people kicking up rocks and talking.
Yeah.
And down the hill, we were halfway on a hill, down from the top of the hill, we would see this whole group of Union soldiers,
oh, wow,
dressed up in Union Civil War uniforms.
Wow.
And this would have been late 50s into the early 1960s.
Okay.
So the Civil War had been over, you know, maybe about 95 years at that time.
Yeah.
And here would come these very young, like mid-teen up to 20-year-old
kids,
soldier boys.
Yeah.
And they would be in small groups. And sometimes there'd be a straggler, one by themselves, and others be like a group of three, four, or five. And they'd just be walking down slowly, Some had guns, some didn't. Their uniforms were torn up, and they would be talking, and you could clearly hear their voices, but for some reason you couldn't understand a word that they were saying.
Oh, wow.
And they would walk by the house, kicking up rocks, and then go down to the bottom of the hill. We had a little stream. They went over the bridge, behind the barn, and up over the next hill and disappear.
Wow.
And this happened about 50 times.
Oh, my gosh.
Almost every single time, my grandmother knew in advance when they were coming.
Wow.
You know, you go, get ready. And to honor them, I mean, she wanted to look as nice as possible.
Well, yeah.
Honor these soldier boys. And as I kind of got used to them, and I was a kid, and I wanted a playmate. There was no other children around.
It's right.
Even a 70-year-old lady out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So when they'd come by, I would run up to the road at times and talk to them. You know, we got some peanut butter. You want to come in and get a sandwich?
Right.
We had a TV channel. TV, we got one channel.
Right.
I said, you want to watch TV? You want to come stay? You want to play? And they wouldn't respond to me at all.
Oh.
And I would be a couple feet from them. I would just walk up to the road. And it was a one-lane gravel road.
Yeah.
I was so close to them. And I just knew not to go up and touch them. I don't know why.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't be respectful.
Yeah.
But they were absolutely solid. I could clearly see their faces. They're young, beautiful faces. And they're soiled, and the toes of their boots were all curled up. They had been wet and dried and not cared for.
Wow.
And their tears in their uniforms, and they just looked worn and tired.
Yeah.
But they just kept walking again and again and again. And at night, sometimes we'd have the screen window open, and I'd hear them at night. I'd hear the rocks being kicked up, and I can hear their voices. And they just did the same thing over and over and over again.
Wow.
And disappeared. And this, you know, this went on over a couple of years. And finally we moved into the city, and I haven't been back there, gosh, in over 55 years.
Wow.
I've been wanting to go back and see if they're still there.
Yeah.
But years later, as I was watching a documentary on TV, and it was on the Civil War, and it said that after the war, many of the soldiers that survived the war did not survive the march home. Because the trains, railroads were blown up, and horses were shot. There was no way to get the soldiers from the south back up to the north or to wherever state they were from.
Yeah.
So they had to walk. And some of them had to walk through several states. And it would take months. And a lot of their loved ones would come down in a horse and buggy and look for them to see if they could pick up, you know, their sons or brothers or sisters and take them home. So I wonder if these kids, these young soldiers, I wonder if they did survive the war and never made it home.
I know. Were they the same group, David?
Same ones, exactly the same, doing the exact same thing, and they walked. It was like the same thing over and over and over again. And I know some people talk about there's memories. There's
It sounds residual to me.
Memories or something like that. And maybe it's that. But then maybe also vicariously, if it's not spirit, maybe astral body or something, maybe soul is still getting a vicarious lesson learned somehow by this repetition of this experience. I don't know.
Well, no, and nobody really knows. It could be just a time slip. You're just seeing something happen about 100 years prior to any of this. You're just...
My grandmother saw it too, though.
Yes.
It wasn't just me. It was both of us. And how did she know?
How did she know that they were coming?
I don't know. I wish I would have asked questions.
Well, you were five.
And, you know, and went over the hill. Then she'd say, well, let's go have some supper, or, you know, let's turn the TV on or something. It was just casual. But, you know, we showed up and we showed our respect.
Yeah.
And that was important to her. What a wonderful lady she was.
Well, were you with her when she passed at all?
I was near her.
Okay.
I was still a child, and I had to go to school. I saw her in the hospital prior to that, but I wasn't with her.
I didn't know if maybe she came to you kind of like the woman that was in the coma.
She didn't. I felt probably about 4 or 5 years later, I felt her. I felt her like hug me.
Oh.
And I knew it was her, and I could smell her perfume.
Nice.
She had this old bottle of perfume. And I just knew it was her. And it was a couple of years later, you know, maybe their time zone is different than our time zone.
Exactly.
And it was okay because I knew spirit moved on, even as a child. I just, there was no fear of it.
I think kids just kind of have an innate ability to kind of be, yeah, that was my mom in a past life, or yes, he was my whatever. And, you know, and it's so funny to hear these kids talk because they're just not afraid at all. And then they just kind of lose it because people are like, you didn't have that dream. That was just whatever, you know, and then they get it pulled away from them, any kind of talk about this kind of thing, you know?
See, that's so interesting because I hear about that, and my family was absolutely the opposite.
Yeah, I love that for you.
We'd sit around, you know, having supper and talk about what spirits we saw.
And even when
my parents finally graduated, and, you know, I moved in with them and stuff, they were seeing things too, and we just sat around the, you know, the dinner table.
Well, it sounds like you had abilities way before you were near death.
You know, I very well could have. I was pretty young for that. But you know what? If you're seeing them, you don't know there's something different between them and someone in the physical.
Right.
It's just people.
Right. Except they're just not acting the way normal people would act if they're not like paying attention to you, that kind of thing. But even when you're a kid, you don't question it. Do you experience anything now, like knowing you have these abilities? I know you're retired now. You're in your own home. Do you ever see anything in your own home, or is that kind of faded?
I have not had anybody come to my house like they needed that attention.
Right.
But if I go somewhere where they are, I'll definitely see them. There's a road not too far from here that I used to have to drive through frequently for work.
Yeah.
And there's kind of some trees and rocks and things between the northbound and the southbound on the same road. It's kind of like a, I don't know what you call it, like a little park in between going north and going south.
Okay.
And when
yeah.
I come down south, mm-hmm. like when I would be coming back home from work, there's this one spot in the road I can feel absolute horror, shock, and I hear the crumpling of cheap metal. And it would be the same thing again and again and again in the exact same spot. And, you know, when you drive, you kind of have to either keep up in traffic. I don't really have time to, like, shut my eyes and, you know, I try to open up my feeling as, who is this? What is this situation? And over time, because I can't go to the spot and just stand there.
Right.
It's busy traffic. I got the impression that it was this young blonde, probably about upper teens, maybe 20s, girl on a bicycle.
Oh.
And the fear is suddenly she turns and sees something come at her. Must be a car or a truck. And I can see her face. I can see the horror. I can hear her gasp and then the crash. And that cheap metal-y sound would be, you know, a big car hitting a bicycle.
Yes.
And it's in the same place. And I don't have to go that way anymore.
Yeah.
But now and then, if I go, and I'll forget about it. You know, I'll drive and I come back home. There she is again. And I can still feel her. So, you know, from a distance, I send her love.
Sure.
I send her acknowledgement that she's still, you know, a valued, wonderful, loving person.
Aww.
And whenever it's time for her,
sure,
that there's something wonderful for her to go on. But, you know, I get so many people say, well, you need to send these people on. And it's like, no, I don't. It's not my place to make a decision for their spiritual growth. And whatever they're going through, if it's a haunting, I like that term. I don't think they mean to be haunting.
Right.
But if they're still stuck in a place, maybe it's something very valuable in their spiritual growth that they need to do that.
Absolutely.
So I just sent them love.
Good for you.
And I sent them like a picture that there's this wonderful light. And whenever you're ready, it's there for you.
That's so nice.
Them have their own experience.
Well, that's such a nice way to look at it too, David, because we don't know if this is maybe just residual, some kind of, you know, trauma recording going over and over and over again. But we also don't know if it's just really, truly a soul that's kind of just reliving it. And you're just like, hey, listen, if you happen to see me this go around, I'm sending you all the love and light I can. And when you're ready, they're ready for you.
Right. And even if it is a residual,
you
know, who's to say soul, even at a distance, it's still not having that experience.
Right.
That's very important for its growth and unfoldment.
I totally agree.
It's not anybody else's place to have an attitude about it. And maybe like the soldier boys.
Yeah.
Maybe that's incredibly important for their growth.
Sure.
Maybe other people learn it while they're still in the body.
Such a great way to look at this.
Right away. Others, you know, others stay in first and second grade a second year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so some people are a little slower than others. Does it matter?
No. You know,
I think we all end up in the right place eventually.
I agree.
In spirit, you know, time could be nothing.
I think that's a beautiful way to look at it. And I've never heard anyone say it like you have. So kudos to you for that. That is a beautiful way to look at that. I love that.
That's the feeling I get. And I've had it since I was a child.
I tell you, when we first started recording, guys, or before we started recording, I was telling David, you don't understand the way you were speaking on the podcast when I heard you on Jeff Mara. I had to have him on, guys, because he's got the most lovely spirit. I love how loving he is to everyone. He's just beautiful.
Thank you so much.
It's just
it's
true.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure. You know what? These experiences have just made me more me. And, you know, it's like my patients, 17 years of hospice.
Yeah.
My patients have been my best teachers.
Really?
Again and again and again. It comes down to the only thing that matters is love.
Yes. That's it. I mean, it's so simple, and people make it so difficult and try to do all these things to be perfect or do this to make sure that they get this or they don't get that and they want revenge or they want... No, it truly is all about love. Are we human? Are we going to make mistakes? Are we stupid about things? Absolutely. But really, it truly comes down to just love. It does.
That's it. And we were talking about people dying and some of the experiences that they were having. Our adult hospice patients,
yes,
would very often see loved ones, you know, come to them, and they would start carrying on the conversations. And I would hear the patient's side of the conversation.
Yes.
And not necessarily, you know, that of the spirit that's
yeah.
there. But every now and then, we would see, like, it looked like a light was shining down from, from the ceiling.
Really?
The and I would just see a little bit of the glow, the outline of their head, and maybe a little bit of their shoulders. And what a blessing that was. And sometimes there would be a bunch of them. And you would just hear the conversation.
Oh,
they're
wow.
just having a good time. And I would interrupt as infrequent as possible to take care of the patient.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say, excuse me, I'm going to take care of
right.
take care of your friend here. And you guys, back to your conversation.
Were they surprised, though? Like, some people, you know, maybe thought Uncle Jim wasn't going to go to heaven. I mean, were they ever surprised and go, oh, they're all welcome. Everybody's there.
It was just like they had visitors. No, it wasn't a shock. I think
okay.
by the time that they were starting to see the spirits coming around them, I think their vibration, they're more spirit than physical. And
oh,
you know,
okay.
here we are, you know, healthy and walking around and totally physical.
Yeah.
As the body starts deteriorating, I think soul takes over a little bit more. That soul consciousness. And they move more from physical into the spiritual realm
yes.
of level of consciousness. And that's something else I felt with spirit. It's not like people sit around and wait for spirit to show itself. It's at a higher level than we are here in the physical.
Oh, that's my I agree.
Oh. If you want to have a spiritual experience, don't expect spirit to step down to your level. You've got to step up to spirit's level.
Yes.
The dying patients naturally are stepping up to spirit's level, and they're on more of the same vibration. So thus they're starting to see all these family members. They could have been there all along, who
yeah.
knows? But now they're having interactions.
Wow.
And it's something like every now and then, you know, when you get that, you get a wonderful experience with spirit. It could be something called a coincidence, and I love that.
Yeah.
You know, you think about somebody and then the song comes on the radio. You say, oh, that's a coincidence. But if you kind of play along with that and say, you know, thank you, Spirit. Thank you for letting me hear that
yes.
song. That reminds me of my mom or something. If you give some appreciation and some focus on Spirit, more starts coming.
It does. Yes.
And
it does.
More and more. And the more you appreciate what Spirit's unfolding before you, the more you get. And it's like spirit rarely comes in and clobbers you over the head. It comes,
yeah.
you know, like a weird bird flying by,
yeah.
or dying on the sidewalk or something like that. It's like whispering. And what happens when someone whispers to you? You lean closer.
Yes.
What was that you said? What'd you say?
Yeah.
And I think that's what spirit wants. It wants us to be still and lean closer to it and say, what'd you say, spirit?
Yeah.
Oh, is that it? It wants you to pay attention. It does simple things to get your attention, and then the whole universe can be unfolded before you eventually.
Wow. David, you have been so amazing. You know, I have so many more questions. I may have to have you back. I would love to talk to you more because I know at one point you were talking about kids that were seeing aliens. Am I right?
Well, they certainly described them as what aliens look like. I don't know if they were aliens. Our hospice children, again and again and again. And our hospice children, I think the longest any one of them lived was 2 weeks.
Okay.
So our kids weren't like playing with each other and getting out of bed.
Right.
You know, generally medicine treats children up to the very last minute before they give up. But over 5 years, I had dozens and dozens of children that could still communicate, see the exact same thing. Some of them drew pictures. It was the same thing. You know, at the time, I just thought they were skinny, weird-looking spirits that came to kids.
Right.
And then later, you know, I started, you know, reading about UFOs and things, and it would be exactly what they would describe as an alien gray.
And that's so crazy and curious to me. I don't know why that was going on. Not that you have all the answers, but I know you've got so many more stories, and I know my listeners are going to love every single one. You're such a good storyteller. I love hearing your stories. I know it's true. David, do you have a social media that anybody can go check you out or tell me everything?
I'm on YouTube.
Yes.
I was going to start a cooking channel.
Nice.
It's Uncle Dave's Kitchen.
Okay.
But so far, I'm just doing some of my spirit stories.
Yes.
And I just didn't want to, you know, I'm getting old and my health is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't want to go and leave my incredible stories forgotten and not told. So I'm doing those. I'm making recordings of them.
Good for you. I'm telling you.
I'll do a biscuit and gravy video.
We all need that. That is like some good comfort food. Biscuits and gravy, man. I tell you, you have been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. My listeners are going to love you. And I will add all of your information to my show notes because, David, you've been so much fun.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time.
Well, I love providing Because I Want to Know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review, or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing. So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again, and I will see you next week.